for plebs by plebs, dropping the Bitcoin only signal. Pleb Underground. Welcome everyone to the Pleb Underground.
Pleb Underground, episode 18. Fiat Maxis proclaim Bitcoiners are mean. They can't aim, they can't even point at our CEO. He didn't self-anoint. Like Sam, WorldCoin, OpenAI. With Bitcoin, you can really open that third eye. Just like each week, I wrote this on the fly. To strong hands from weak, please don't be that guy that sells when he should be stacking. How are you ever going to get that rack in? Perfect eyesight is 2020. Bitcoin has got 40-40. It's like we see into the future. We joke like Rick and Morty. Get building your family. Lock down your favorite shorty. This rhymes a little long, just like the bets of joke and sortie.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. And that's right. You guessed it. You guessed it. We have fellow Bitcoiner, Joe Consorti, joining us. Joe, thank you very much for joining us on the Pleb Underground YouTube show.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to chat with you boys today.
Very cool. Very cool. I hope you appreciated that rhyme from Walton. I thought that was pretty clever.
We know that
you're a bit of a macro guy, and I started following you because I liked a lot of your takes. It's very interesting. Even though you have a very polished style, you still have a toxic flavor to it. You know, I could still tell it's Bitcoin only. Anyways, we are going to dive right into the numbers.
The numbers, of course, brought to us by timechainstats.com. That's timechainstats.com. If you want a new way to browse the time chain, please visit timechaincalendar.com. That's timechaincalendar.com. Phil, how are the numbers this week?
At the time of this recording, the block height is 766,682. The Bitcoin price, 17,108. The total public lightning capacity, 5,070.89. Moscow time, 58:45. And the chain rewrite days, 790. Bitcoin holding up that security model very, very well. So, Walton, this week, it's been pretty crazy, huh?
Yeah, it's been an interesting week.
All right, we're going to start off by taking a look at a tweet from Joe Carlisari. The 13 to 15 BTC bear market was 411 days. That's right, 2013 to 2015, the bear market was 411 days. From the peak of the 17 bull market to the 18 bottom, it was 358 days. And we're now at 394 days since the November 21 peak. If we haven't bottomed by Christmas, this will be the longest bear market in Bitcoin's history. So, I definitely want to ask Joe for his take on what he thinks of this. Does it mean anything, right, that we may be experiencing the longest bear market in history? One thing that we mention a lot on this show is that the hash rate is at all-time highs. Recently, it has pulled back, but contrary to the previous bull market, where the hash rate dropped in kind with the price, in this case, it's done the complete reversal. So I feel as though we're in uncharted waters.
We are in uncharted waters. Joe Carlisari is an extremely bright individual. I'm very happy to have been able to interact with him. But, you know, the Bitcoin network itself is operating perfectly fine, right? You know, we on this show understand the delineation between the asset and the network. But unfortunately, the mainstream doesn't. But one thing that is true is that this is Bitcoin's first actual protracted, longer than anticipated economic recession, right? You know, we've had economic downturns here and there. You know, in 2015, we had a minor economic slowdown. In 2019, we had the repo crisis where Bitcoin had this deflationary spike, but then immediately recovered. And same deal in 2020. You know, we had Bitcoin experience the deflationary spike March 13, 2020. And then all of a sudden, the Fed stepped in with these liquidity facilities to save the actual economy, which was seizing up and caused markets to fall. And so every single time there's been a contraction, when the Fed hasn't planned for there to be one, i.e. 2015, 2019, and 2020 in the real economy, they've chosen to backstop it, right? To come in with liquidity facilities and once again, support markets and get them flowing again. Not markets, but the real economy per se. And so this is the first time where the Fed is actually deliberately tightening policy, both through slowing its asset purchases to banks. And so banks, bank reserves are falling. Essentially what that means is, you know, banks are less inclined to extend credit. Credit becomes more expensive. People stop buying things slowly, you know, all thousands of different things, essentially all converging to a slowing economy. And as a result of that, people go for assets that are not in the riskier category, right? So right now we're seeing bonds get bid up pretty heavily this year. And this is a fun fact. When inflation is high, Bitcoin and bonds are, stocks and bonds are actually correlated nearly 1-to-1. And this year was the most correlated they've ever been. And both of them have been in an extreme bear market. But bonds are catching a bid right now. What does that tell us? It tells us investors are anticipating a further growth slowdown into 2023 and potentially beyond, right? Why do people purchase bonds? They purchase them because they're a safe haven asset. And so that's what we're seeing right now. So Bitcoin has already experienced this first leg of the risk on sell-off that's occurred because the Fed has started tightening its policy interest rate. But moving into next year is going to be another test because the rate, you know, policy interest rate has only risen for, you know, 8-9 months now. It hasn't necessarily impacted company earnings because companies obviously haven't had to roll their debt just yet. Hasn't even been a full year. And also companies may have stronger balance sheets than people anticipate because rates were low for so long. Chances are they were able to roll their debt at extremely low rates and push out their maturity. And so the Fed may have to hold higher for longer, and they may be able to because companies may be stronger than the market anticipates, right? Yield curve inversions are predicting, anticipating a contraction, and people are expecting the Fed to step in, but they won't step in if companies are doing fine, if money markets are doing fine, if everything operating normally. What's the escape valve? It's risk assets. And so Bitcoin has survived so far nearly, again, the longest bear market it's been, almost the longest bear market it's been through, but its first actual economic contraction, and that contraction is slated to continue into 2023. So we'll see how it holds up. It's holding up pretty all right so far.
I'd just like to push back a little bit on the terminology of Bitcoin being a risk on asset. I think you could argue that it currently trades like one.
Trades like one, yeah.
Certainly, you know, those of us that, that know its potential don't trade it as such. But certainly people need to take their coins off exchanges. I keep banging on about this, but they really fucking do, because
100% agree.
They need to remove the liquidity from these fiat maxis that are able to, you know, play games with the markets.
For sure. Fully agree with you there. I didn't hedge my language properly there, but I agree with you that it's traded like a risk on asset, right? It's sort of this gap in markets where they're trading it, not necessarily what it is, but I'd like to think that I move markets
that sits with Bitcoiners versus the proportion that sits with people that are just viewing it like, you know, like an equity or something.
And unfortunately, that latter cohort of people are the people who move markets. They've got the money. And so that's how it trades for now. As conditions continue deteriorating and every single contraction in the economy, every single dysfunction in money markets and what have you is met with more and more liquidity facilities from the Fed, then Bitcoin stands to benefit. And I think that's when, you know, a few more recessions that are met by a few more QEs and a few more zero interest rate policies, that's when Bitcoin begins its shift. Well, it already has started, but, you know, it really goes parabolic and it shifts from being viewed as a risk on asset to a risk off asset that benefits. As the Fed continues intervening and essentially the markets and the economy become dependent on Fed liquidity.
Printer go burr. that's pretty much it, right? The printer goes burr. That's all they have to it. And look, at the end of the day, right? It's a hybrid asset. I don't believe that we've ever seen anything like this in history. So to your point, I think that we're going to see some very interesting developments happen as they continue to print, because as we know, 70% of all the US dollars were printed in the last 3 years, and that's completely unprecedented. And we just keep going now from crisis to crisis. And I think that people don't realize is that every single one of these crises is another reason to continue to print. And to your point, do another QE. I mean, I forget who it was that tweeted this out, but already back in 2018, we were already, and even before that, making fun of QE infinity, right? Like, it was already QE infinity as soon as there was QE1.
Because it's unprecedented. I have a chart up here and I can send it to you guys, but bank reserves, which is essentially what the Fed, you know, the Fed purchases bonds from banks and then it gives them bank reserves, which is this interbank token. And when banks have more reserves on hand, they're more inclined to extend credit. Banks used to have like a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of the reserves they have now. Like, we're closing in on several trillion dollars worth of reserves when like there used to be only a couple billion. And so this new asset class that previously wasn't a huge prominent part of monetary plumbing is now one of the biggest parts of monetary plumbing. And we have no idea what QT is going to do. And now we're undergoing QT for the fifth time. And so we'll see how long reserves can get drained from these banks before shit starts to hit the fan.
So I'm sorry, I just want to make sure I understand. So does that mean that they are not lending money out?
They're less inclined to. So
they're less inclined to
dry up. They're less inclined.
The rate at which they do.
But right now, their reserves are, if I understood correctly, though, the reserves are at the highest now.
The highest, but they're declining. So as the Fed, as the treasury that the Fed purchased matures off of the Fed's balance sheet, as they unwind it, then that bank reserve also disappears. And so that's why bank reserves are falling.
Okay. Very interesting. Very interesting stuff.
Because the commercial banks own that debt.
So Walton, I saw you pull something up there.
I might have mispulled it.
No worries. Let's dive into that story.
On a very, very similar point at the time about the difficulty adjustment. Let me just reshare this for you guys. It was Marty saying, and I certainly agree with him here, that we have ruthless capitalism at play right now. Essentially, miners that are leveraged being flushed out. I'll read his words though. He says Bitcoin just had its largest downward difficulty adjustment since July 2021. Many miners in the West are hitting a wall erected by debt and higher energy prices. Some are still white-knuckling it en route to insolvency. Ruthless capitalism is at play. I think we've talked about this theme in general, that in 2022 we see leverage and fiat debt getting flushed out of the system, and I think it's pulling the weeds out. It's leaving the strongest to survive. I think it's bullish, but and you see these videos. You saw, I think, was it today or yesterday, a video of some hut in Africa that's with a few miners in it, and they've got some hydroelectric. Their own little hydroelectric powered, like right next to it. Like there's all these mining developments happening all over the world. And yes, okay, it doesn't replace quickly the hash rate that these big miners that now have, you know, hundreds or thousands of miners just sitting around not being used. It takes time, but I think it's good for the network, and it's good for decentralization.
Mm-hmm. When conditions are too good, people get too comfortable with not being good capital allocators, right? Rates are low for too long. People don't, you know, let's take miners, for example. They're just like any other business. You know, when rates are far too low for far too long, people think, okay, I can secure financing at, you know, a 200 basis point spread to like the 3-month T-bill, which is, you know, 25.25%, right? So really, really low rates. Chances are this isn't going to change for, you know, I'll go on a 1-month contract to finance this deal, and I'm going to collateralize the borrowing with ASICs, right? And you're seeing this a lot. Like this is how mining companies borrow and expand their operations. They collateralize their lending, or their borrowing rather, with the ASIC miners that they're going to purchase or they have purchased. And so they buy them. They say, okay, because I got such a low rate, I don't have to be stingy with the electricity cost. And then you see them, instead of going after extremely competitive rates, like 2 cents or 3 cents a kilowatt hour, which is just hearing that is music to my ears, because that's a license to print money. Because here in the Northeast, the price per kilowatt hour is like 17 cents. It's awful.
Easily. I was paying 22. I mean,
you
residential.
Have no idea what you're talking about. Like, you have no idea what you're talking about. Like, in Europe, things have, like, electricity is probably, like, tripled or quadrupled over.
Well, I wasn't even aware you guys had electricity anymore. I thought.
Yeah, no. We do. Well, I'm not in mainland Europe. Like, those guys are proper fucked. Like, fortunately, we haven't, you know, we don't use gas, but I've got oil. But some people who are using gas in mainland Europe, I'd be very concerned. But energy prices have been shooting up, certainly in fiat terms, and yeah, in Bitcoin terms this year, as well, hitting the miners. But again, it's not all of the miners, the ones who were thinking long term, the ones that secured those energy contracts in sub 2 cents per kilowatt hour. People who are finding stranded energy. There's a lot of potential. I have one further link for the numbers section. Some breaking market news. The Bank of International Settlements foreign exchange swap positions point to over $80 trillion of hidden US dollar debt reported off balance sheet.
Where'd it go?
Joe, so my understanding is it was about $30 trillion US dollar debt on the US debt pile. I'm guessing therefore global debt is probably in the order of $100 trillion. So $80 trillion of kind of hidden debt sounds like quite a lot.
It does. It sounds like a lot at face value, but when you dive a little bit beyond the headline, there's a little bit more to it. And actually, at the Bitcoin layer, the Substack that we did this Wednesday, I spent time poring over the BIS piece, and I did a little bit of money markets education because at face value, especially that tweet, it really exploded. And while it is concerning, like to know that there was, and it's actually, if you read the article, when I read the article, it turned out $65 trillion, not $80 trillion, worth of hidden dollar debt exists in banks and non-banks in the form of FX swaps. Now, obviously, so there are two types of secured money markets, one of them being overnight reverse repurchase agreements or repo. We've heard of repo as of recently. And basically that's just treasury collateralized. You have a US treasury or a bank, you collateralize it and borrow against it overnight. And then the following day you swap it back. And then the rate of return that you earn back becomes the repo rate. And then the second one is the one that this dollar debt was found in, which is the FX swap market. And that's a currency collateralized borrowing market. And so usually dollars are one side of the equation here. So basically all it is participants usually want to borrow dollars. And so they post their home currency as collateral for either overnight funding purposes or 1 week funding purposes. The majority of this has a very short length. The majority of these contracts have a very, very short length. Basically, they're used by banks and non-banks in order to fund themselves and fund their operations and do trades and things like that, and also hedge their portfolio on a rolling basis. Now, you know, the $80 trillion in size seems like a whole lot, but the reason it isn't is because FX swaps are a derivatives contract, and the notional amount of derivatives in the world, I think, is in the quadrillion dollars. I pulled up the quarterly report on bank trading and derivatives activities from the Office of the Comptroller. Out of the top 25 commercial banks, we're talking JP Morgan, Goldman, Citi, B of A, Wells Fargo, they hold derivatives contracts. The notional amount of these contracts is more than 10x the size of the assets that they hold. The banks are no stranger to having extreme amounts of derivatives positioning.
This is obviously out of date, but I just remembered, and I apologize, everyone, if you hate Trace, apologies, but he wrote this thing called credit contraction, and I think it really explains a lot of the problems with the current fiat system. And here you do see a kind of, you know, a rough estimate of some of these numbers that we're talking about here. You can see the derivatives, many orders greater than world GDP, certainly, and many other asset classes.
Let's say 1.6 quadrillion. Right there.
Yeah, and that was back in 2008, 2009.
We know that the amount of hedging activity and derivatives and debt hasn't decreased. It has simply moved away from regulatory authorities. And that's what was discovered in this piece. It simply moved offshore, off balance sheet, where regulatory authorities couldn't see it. And so it's difficult to track. It's difficult to track and calculate the scale and the size and the location of the debt in the system. And so when people like the Fed are conducting monetary policy under the assumption that they know the total notional amount of debt in the system, and then it turns out that, it's more than triple the reported amount, that could be a fly in the ointment. And this is more so like short-term funding stress for people who use these contracts, right? If it reaches a point where borrowing gets too expensive and these key money markets freeze up, you could see something like in 2019 with the repo bailout where, lenders stopped lending. There was a dash for cash in the system. And essentially, because there was such a need for cash, but lenders just weren't lending, the Fed wasn't able to effectively conduct policy anymore, right? The repo rate shot from, 2.5% or 3.5%, whatever it was, to like 20% for like a few days straight before the Fed stepped in with liquidity. And so that is a potential issue that could occur. But again, really, like nothing has changed about the funding stress in markets, which is currently relatively low. It just turns out that the amount of US dollar debt associated with these contracts happens to be three times the size of what was reported. It's a fun, as funding stress continues, as short interest rates rise, as the Fed hikes its policy rate, this could become a funding issue. And if we see an issue in this funding market, then it could end up being three times the size of what it would otherwise be. Because again, the majority of the outstanding swaps in this market with a dollar on one side are a week or less, right? And so that makes these contracts that have to get rolled over basically daily really, really, really susceptible to dollar shortages, if there ever was one. And again, we talked about it earlier, this is the most aggressive tightening regime we've ever seen. And so if funding stress does emerge before the Fed changes its tune on policy, we don't know if that will occur, but if it were to occur, because of this hidden offshore, off-balance sheet, unreported dollar debt, it would be more severe than it would have been if this debt didn't exist. So it's not, as per usual, it's like a scary, scary headline. And I hate the fact that I know how this monetary plumbing works. Because at the end of the day, I know it's all total BS. I know I absolutely hate the fact that all of it exists. But it's helpful to know that it's not an imminent, oh my God, crisis issue. It's more so like, okay, a little fly in the ointment. We'll keep an eye on it. But really no surprise. It turns out that FTX were not the only degenerates in town. As it turns out, everybody loves leverage and everybody loves cranking up the amount of dollar debt globally.
The most expensive Rube Goldberg machine ever. Essentially. Essentially. Oh my gosh. Now, look, Joe, awesome explanation. I mean, I learned a lot just from listening to you break that down, because absolutely, when I saw that headline, I'm just like, oh, here's a whole bunch of money that they have no idea how they lost it and they can't account for any of it. That's as simple as my mind that I can understand it. So I appreciate you diving into the weeds and explaining that out for us.
Of course. Bill, just one note on FTX and leverage. It seems like, Sam has some sort of other leverage that's enabling him to get away with gambling away client funds using leverage. But what I don't understand, again, how do you lose money when you're like, when you're using client funds and you have the order book, like, to trade against your own customer? Like, it's embarrassingly bad.
It's like, if have you seen Back to the Future rules
to cheat and then you fail?
It's like it's like Biff went back in time and got the sports almanac from Back to the Future, and he knew the outcome of every game, and he still lost money.
It's true. Sam is Biff. Oh my gosh, Sam is Biff. That's insane. All right. Anyways, I think we definitely killed the numbers today. And without further ado, we are going to dive into the opium.
So that was the numbers. One more number, the 13%. The 13% are Bitcoiners who don't own anything else. And Bitcoiners who don't own anything else should spend their Bitcoin, if they so choose, with Bitcoin-only companies like Represent. Finally, these things have these beautiful garments have gotten through my horrible customs where they trapped them for weeks. honestly, these items are beautiful, really soft garments, very well fitting. Yeah, very happy with all of these. So thank you, David. But yeah, represent limited, represent LTD.com is a great Bitcoin only brand with some great items. You should really check them out. It's important for Bitcoiners to support other Bitcoiners and other Bitcoin only businesses. So once again, that's representltd.com. And if you use the code pleb-underground, you can get 10% off. So that's 10% off for the 13%. My first link today, more of this idiot saga. You know, he's now just continuing this campaign of gaslighting, pretending that he's an idiot, etc., etc. But I think this is hopium, because I think the longer this nonsense goes on, the more midwits get woken up that need a little bit more time to kind of catch up to. Oh, actually, there's lots of corruption. Maybe we should avoid all this shitcoinery.
Joe, do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
Go right ahead.
Okay, you were talking before about different types of leverage. You're talking, Walton, you alluded to different types of leverage. And I think that what's going on right now with FTX is very interesting. I think we're kind of getting to see this parade of leverage. We're getting to see, because, I mean, let's be honest, right? This guy lost over $10 billion, traded against his own customers. There's just a whole bunch of red flags with what was going on between Almeida and the exchange. And the reality is that this guy is doing a tour. And what that tells me, it's like an apology tour. And what that tells me is that the powers that be want the bread and circuses. They are letting this guy go around. Now, I don't know what the end result, like what the reason is for this. Like, I don't quite get why the theatrics, but I somewhat think it has to do with the regulation. I don't know. I feel like it has something to do with perception and what they're going to do with the regulation. I feel like this guy going around and just being an outright clown, and everybody knowing that he should not be getting a stage to talk about what he did. And I feel like they're doing this on purpose. I totally do. I feel like they're allowing this behavior on purpose. And I don't know if it just has to do with the regulation or just the fact that they essentially, without being too general, but still being general, I feel as though, you know, the elites, to a certain extent, are doing essentially what FTX is doing. So it's kind of difficult to make an example out of him when they're doing the same thing.
Yeah,
so
wait till you hear about the paper products that the fiat bankers are selling.
So yeah, so that's, yeah,
it's funny, because in the lead up to all of this going down for the last 3 years, SBF was heralded as like one of the smartest people alive, right? And every single interview he went on, he was clearly, I mean, he was on speed, right? We know now that he was literally on Nick patches all over his body, and the dude was taking amphetamines with Caroline. Like, this is known. But he was articulate. He could clearly speak his mind. He knew exactly how his company was run. And now, afterward, he's feigning ignorance. Suddenly, this individual who had his finger on the pulse of his company 24/7 and could give you top-of-mind answers to everything doesn't have the answers anymore, right? Do you know who does that? Criminals. Criminals, when they are facing prosecution, they go, well, I'm not so sure. You know, I don't have all the facts. And they beat around the bush. Why? Because if they were direct and honest, like SBF has been direct and not honest, but he's been direct. If they were that level of direct, he'd be in handcuffs, right? And so he's feigning ignorance. He's doing this tour and trying to disguise abject fraud under the veil of, oh, I didn't know what was happening, right? We know that he was committing fraud, explicit fraud, and he had a direct hand in that. And he knew it. He knew what was going on, right? But in the aftermath, he's going, I really don't know what happened. He knew exactly what happened. And that's why he's going on this, you know, apology tour of his.
Did you see that video that Dave Portnoy did where he went off on SBF? And he actually mentioned something very interesting to your point. okay, is that when he had done business with him, he noticed that SBF was very detail oriented, and he was very concerned with very minute details that didn't seem relevant at all. And he goes, I don't understand something. He goes, how could somebody care about something so irrelevant and all of a sudden not have any idea what was going on in his own business? So to your point, you're absolutely right. It is an act. Sorry, Walton, yeah. Go ahead.
No, I agree. There's always going to be corruption. What enabled this? Well, people keeping their assets and, you know, fuck shit coins, but people keeping their value on exchanges when they should have been, you know, having it in self-custody Bitcoin. You know, so to those of you that lost money with FTX, I'm really sorry, but at the same time, it's your fault.
You know what? To your point, I think there's another piece to this, which is the greed aspect of it. And at the end of the day, short-sightedness. I remember when Celsius first came out before they had a shitcoin. And Alex was still being heralded as like this really intelligent godfather of voiceover IP, Alex Mashinsky. I remember when I was looking at the Celsius offering, I'm like, hey, that's pretty genius, right? They give you this small, steady rate of return, and all you do is just simply store your Bitcoin with them. And I figured, I'm like, you know what? They don't have a token. Seems relatively low risk. I'll put just a bit. And this is exactly what they expect, right?
Then they got a token.
Right? So you do it for like a year or so, but then they realize they're not making any money. They're really not. They're essentially just keeping the lights on. They need to print their own money if they want to play the big games with all the rest of the players. So then they bring in their shitcoin. And the whole time you think, well, it's okay. It's, you know what? I'm going to be a shitcoin apologist. It's fine because they're giving me a reasonable rate of return. This isn't a scam. It's not a rug pull. And again, right, this is part of a salesman tactic.
Yeah.
Right? When you feel the warm and fuzzies, that's when you're okay. You know, that this is something I learned when I did technical support. You know, when you have a customer that feels good in their skin and they're happy, they don't even know what you're doing, then they're going to listen to everything you have to say.
So Phil, I think one thing that makes people happy and excited is hopium charts, right?
Yes.
But as we all know, trading is a shitcoin. And so you can't trust TA unless it's from the most vocal opponent of shitcoin as there is, and of course that is Dieter Bob. And so Dieter Bob's TA we show here up only. I mean, to me it kind of looks like it's still going to be at like $40,000 in 2026, which doesn't seem that hopeful, but I think his idea is that it bounces and we go much higher at some point. Fuck the rainbow chart, but like, look, this model here does not seem to have been broken just yet. I mean, it looks like we're getting a little bit close, but Dieter Bob up only.
Dieter with the logarithmic hopium, huh? That's right. That's right. Look, that chart, right? He's been showing that chart for such a long time. I love it. It definitely makes me happy. It makes me happy, but I also at the same time have to realize that it's all it's showing is past data.
Yeah, no, to be honest, it's a joke, really. I do actually have two real things that I actually think are truly hopeful. One is from Ben the Carman. We did talk about this before, that they were creating browser-based Lightning wallets. There is a name to this now, Mutiny. Because this is compatible with Google Chrome, by current estimates, there are 2.65 billion people in the world that today could use a Lightning wallet in their browser, which is kind of revolutionary.
Like we said at the beginning, you know, the network continues growing and proliferating. And in times like these, the people who efficiently allocated capital and weren't morons and are actually looking to build and provide real value are doing fine. So what kinds of companies haven't gone under, apart from some of the poorly allocated miners? Bitcoin companies and Lightning companies, they're doing fine. They're doing fine. Why is that? Because they don't, their business model isn't incumbent on zero interest rate policy. They provide real value. What's happening right now is a purge from every single sector, whether it be TradFi or Bitcoin native, who is a bad capital allocator that was reliant on low rates, cheap and easy, easily accessible cost of capital. But with Bitcoin companies, with Lightning companies, that actually the, you know, the people who own these businesses and operate these businesses and everyone who works in them has this underlying desire to build out the Bitcoin and Lightning networks, they're doing just fine. Ben the Car Man is cool as hell. I get the chance to meet him. And every other dev that's working on the network, whether it be Bitcoin or Lightning, my hat's off to them, right? It's one thing to understand the macro landscape and fold that into Bitcoin, but it's leaps and bounds more neural plasticity to learn how to actually build on top of Bitcoin and Lightning. So I will perpetually tip my hat to everyone who build on top of these things.
Very well said.
Yeah, then well totally said. Agreed.
Okay, the final piece of Hopium, let me share with you, is also a slight, I don't know if you call it a humble brag or a victory lap. It's kind of a bit of both here. So back in October of 2021, I made a prediction that Square would release a Bitcoin and Lightning point of sale device, which could drive a huge or lead to a huge increase in adoption. And just this week, Jack seems to hint at that happening. Combining the Bitcoin and Lightning point of sale with the fiat point of sale, obviously, that Square already provides. So it's not just Magoo that calls things out in advance.
No, it's not. It's not just Magoo that calls things. Lots of us have called tons of stuff out in advance. We just don't have the massive followings that remind everyone that we call these things out.
By the way, sorry, that post when I made that prediction, after a little bit of an exchange back and forth, got me blocked by Dan Held. He didn't respect that prediction.
So first of all,
that's probably because he wasn't able to steal it and then make it his or something. I'm not quite sure. Like, yeah,
it wasn't his. It wasn't a Dan Held original. So as a result, you, my friend, are blocked and you are othered. But look,
I'm proud of that one though, to be fair.
It's kind of an inevitability, and I think for the listeners out there who aren't aware of this already, so don't get me wrong, the Square offering for a point of sale system is actually pretty big in terms of legacy retail and legacy payment systems. That's nothing to be laughed at, okay? But what people don't understand or what people miss is that there is a lot of do-it-yourself point of sale systems that are usable right now, right? With their back end being a regular old Bitcoin node or even a BTC pay server, which is actually also just a Bitcoin node.
I mean, most people could just do it on their phone, right? To be honest, it might be easily clickable by many retail providers without kind of having to do significant amounts of training or this sort of thing.
And to that point, right? As PubKey was explaining, they have to do training on two different things. They have to, it's the reconciliation between the two. Having been a person who has trained people for work in technical things, I could tell you when you have to train people on two separate platforms, it is not easy and it's not fun. Training them is actually easy. The problem is getting them to keep the knowledge that you train them on between the and creating the differentiation between the two platforms. But what I was trying to make, the point I was trying to make about the do-it-yourself platforms is they are already point and click. They are already simple. The difference is that it's not coming out of a polished brand with the recognition and the backing that Square has. So this is, you know, anyways, I think it's huge. I do think it's huge.
I do too. Network effects are important. You know, if you can, that's why even though Twitter for years and years and years was censoring everything, Network effects are important. Alternatives cropped up, but nobody used them. Why did nobody use them? Your friends weren't on the platform. It wasn't going to reach anybody. There wasn't an audience outside of your existing audience that was going to see it. And so that's why, you know, things like this are important. On-ramps with companies that everyone's familiar with and that a device or a service that everyone uses is important, which is why it's huge that Carman and team were able to put a Lightning wallet on Chrome. It's why it's huge that I cannot remember who, but I saw it on Carman's Twitter, that there is now a Lightning node and a full-blown, I don't know if it's a full-blown Bitcoin node, but I know that it was a Lightning node on Chrome as well. And now with Square too, right? These on-ramps that already have a huge you know, backing behind them is pretty huge. And I think that accelerates Bitcoin adoption.
Totally agreed. Totally agreed. Bullish. All right. That was some good stuff. Good hopium, Walton. Great hopium. Okay. We are going to move on over to our new segment, our newly named segment, Wrecked.
So up next, we have Wrecked, sponsored by Crypto Cloaks. CryptoCloaks.com or CryptoCloaks.eu. You can find a whole range of Bitcoin items, such as the Honey Badger, in which you can keep your FUD dice or perhaps a signing device. That's CryptoCloaks.com. If you want to support the fight against evil, you can go to DefendingBTC.com or you can purchase the Hodlnaut helmet from Crypto Cloaks, with 50% of the proceeds going to that campaign and the fight against evil. A very worthy cause. If you use the code Pleb Underground or Pleb Dash Underground, Phil.
Yep. I forget. It's Pleb Underground for 5% off.
5% off all of the goodies at CryptoCloaks.com or CryptoCloaks.eu. Once again, Bitcoin only businesses. Get out there and support them, plebs. Really important. So, Phil, who got wrecked this week?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So, look, we saw what happened with the exchanges. We're not going to go through all of the names, but maybe we will, right? Maybe we'll mention a few, right? We've got Celsius, for not just the exchanges, but we'll just talk about all the wrecked that has happened, right? Celsius, we have FTX, BlockFi, Three Arrows Capital, Voyager. Okay. So, anyways, it's a whole mix, right? It's a whole mix. A lot of the conversation has also gone towards another player, which I have to be honest. I know a few plebs that have been talking about them failing for a little while, and I started following their, not their Twitter, but just kind of the news articles around them. I'm talking about Nexo. Is Nexo actually wrecked? No, they're not wrecked yet. Not saying that they will be wrecked, but we're going to dive into a story, and we're going to take a look at some tweets that, hey, look, you know what? Maybe they'll get you thinking something else. I don't know. But personally, I'm just glad that I do not leave my funds on any of these exchanges for the paltry 1% to 3%. If you haven't figured out yet that Bitcoin averages 200% a year over a long enough time frame, right? If you do it, let's say a 4-year time frame, a 10-year time frame, you can figure out those percentages. If you're willing to give up that 200% for 3% or 6%, hey, that's your problem. Okay. That if you think that that's worth it, the 1% to 6% daily that you're not really going to ever end up seeing the fruition from, that's perfectly fine. But anyways.
That's my favorite. The fact that they specify daily, and the only way that you can offer an annual percent rate daily is if they are lending an annual percent rate, like 3%, 4%, 5%, 6%, 7% APR daily, is if they're taking your money and then lending it to the riskiest of risky borrowers overnight. Right. That is the only way that is possible. But nobody's financially literate. Nobody knows that. When they see yield farming, they go, oh, money. They don't know where it comes from. It comes from lending. When it comes to crypto, you're lending to the riskiest borrowers out there. Sorry for interrupting. But
no, not at all. Not at all. Walton, you wanna jump in before I start the article?
It's all right. You go.
Okay, here we go, guys. Let's dive into it here. Out of the Daily HODL, we've got an article here. Crypto lender Nexo to leave the United States citing lack of regulatory clarity. So the Switzerland-based, crypto-based lender Nexo is announcing plans to cease its business operations in the United States. The crypto lender says that the decision is influenced by the regulatory and policy landscape in the United States. Withdrawals will continue to be processed in real time, according to Nexo. This is always very important. Everybody is always processing withdrawals in real time. As the ship sinks, everyone gets their money, right? Anyways, not saying the ship is sinking for Nexo yet, just saying that I just find it funny that it doesn't matter who you are, you always want to tell everyone that you're processing withdrawals in real time. As we effectuate our orderly exit from the US, Nexo's payment specialists have been informed. Payment specialists, people. Okay? These are, Joe, you can confirm or deny with me. This is very intricate training that they get. They are payment specialists. They've been informed and will continue processing withdrawals in real time. Good job. so that customers, as always, have uninterrupted access to their assets. All right, they're doing a good job. I'm feeling the warm and fuzzies. I don't need to worry. You can keep my money. As of December 6, 2022, our earn interest product will not be available for existing clients in 8 additional U.S. states. These immediate changes only affect the usability of the earn interest product for citizens and residents of the 8 aforementioned states. These clients will continue to enjoy access to all other Nexo products available in these jurisdictions until further notice. Okay, so it's the yield product, your yield products, that they're not allowed in those states, if I understood correctly. The crypto lender says its decision to quit the U.S. was arrived after months of dialogue with regulators. Our decision comes after more than 18 months of good faith dialogue with the U.S. and federal regulators. Despite their inconsistent and changing positions, Nexo has engaged in significant ongoing efforts to proactively modify its business in response to their concerns. Okay, so let's just quickly take a look at the Nexo website here. 130 billion processed in 5 years, 5 million Nexo users, 60 plus supported shit coins, 200 plus available jurisdictions. Okay, so they're all over the world. All right, fair enough. So when I saw this tweet from Corey Clipston, I gotta say, this kind of threw up some alarm bells. This was December 5th, 2022. Today, Atnexo emailed asking Swan to deposit funds with them for the first time ever. Coincidence or desperately seeking new deposits? Claiming to be a regulated crypto institution, they offer earn up to 20% APY paid out daily, Joe. That's 20%, man, paid out daily. It's so funny. We were just talking about that. Anyways, up to 10x leverage to your portfolio. Okay. So look, we're all very familiar with Corey. And if you're not, Corey did a fantastic job documenting and essentially helping to bring light to the falling apart of Three Arrows Capital, Celsius, BlockFi, FTX. Okay, so Corey has managed to build up some pretty positive karma when it comes to calling out these players. I want to draw our attention to this other tweet. This is from at Happy Hippo DeFi. And this is pretty interesting. He goes into, we're not going to dive into the whole tweet storm, but I want to pay attention to the chart. So Nexo is a hedge fund pretending to be a bank. Very interesting point, a very interesting point about Nexo. And if we take a look here, we can actually see their whole entire business. And I have to be honest, whenever I see a chart like this, that's as complicated as that, I think to myself, there's not a chance they're doing any of this stuff for real. Okay. I don't buy it. I was around for the US, the USI? What was that company there that did those fake investment packages like BitConnect? There was another one, Daver Coin, all kinds of stuff. Like, look, these all seemed like legitimate investment platforms that could give you return. They all did. Okay. So one of the last things I want to look at in this before we discuss what we think about Nexo. Nexo did this really, really long tweet thread about how they make money. And in that tweet thread was that chart showing the intricate way in which their money is moved around. But I just wanted to quickly take a look at this example here that they use, which explains a bit of how they make their money. A market neutral strategy in periods of heightened volatility involves price arbitrage. An asset is simultaneously bought and sold on two exchanges, capturing the spread. Few can capture that as it requires an inventory of various assets across different platforms. This is true. If I'm not mistaken, and Joe can correct me if I'm wrong, it also involves having to know how to program bots, because nobody can really move that quickly.
Yeah, it does. Arb trading is done by high frequency trading systems, and those are generally developed in house. And so, while you are taking on, I mean, arbing, you're not taking on a whole lot of risk at all, but you, it does necessitate that you have money spread across, you know, various different platforms in order to capture, capture spreads while they are made available. And then they're only available for seconds or, you know, a period of several seconds before they're gone away. And it is a legitimate trading strategy. But again, you know, it, with Sam Bankman-Fried, one of the things that he was saying as a capital allocator was that, you know, when the going got rough, all the hedges, none of the hedges worked. But you got to understand, like, the reason a hedge is a hedge is because it is uncorrelated, right? And what is correlated essentially one-to-one? Shitcoins and shitcoins with Bitcoin. So if all you're holding is UST and USDC and then various shitcoins, you're not going to hedge out ass coin with booby coin, right? It just, that's not how it works. It's not how capital allocators, you know, operate. And so while the ARB trading strategy, you know, it, chances are within, you know, crypto, it's probably relatively speaking low profit. You know, so that's generating them some income. But what other strategies are they using? And do they have anything else in their portfolio to function as a hedge that isn't crypto? Chances are no. You know, these individuals are charlatans. They don't know portfolio. They wouldn't know portfolio management if it was written on a brick and thrown at them. So we'll see. We'll really see how good capital what Nexo's capital base looks like. If it's strong, you know, as we continue moving through this protracted economic period, the good piece about Bitcoin is that it's Bitcoin's first major recession, but you know it doesn't have any earnings. It can only compress off of interest rate risk, and as rates rise, that's how it compresses. It gets traded with risk assets. But unlike every single company next year, Bitcoin doesn't have an earnings report that's going to contract. But these companies that rely on low interest rates and impressionable investors, which will probably be going away as the unemployment rate shoots to the ceiling, you know, these companies do. So we'll see, right? Again, you know, these Nexo yield from nowhere types, who knows if they're in a bad spot, but per the Corey tweet, if you are tweeting, and it could just be a coincidence, could be nothing burger, but if you are reaching out to people, approaching them, saying, hey, deposit funded the platform, it could be a subtle way of asking for liquidity. They may not be strapped for cash yet. They may just be looking for people who are interested in depositing liquidity at the platform, but it's disconcerting.
You know what? To your point, I agree with every single one of those until I ran into this tweet. So I saw this pop up, okay? December 7th, 2022, 2 days ago. Nexo, smart staking is live on Nexo. Earn staking rewards paid out daily. Join the Ethereum 2.0 validating network without any hassle. Just swap $10 or more of ETH for Nexo. Staked ETH, net. And you're in. Okay, so look, I know that just creating a shitcoin or a wrapped shitcoin or whatever the hell shitcoin out of thin air doesn't necessarily mean that they're completely wrecked. But if we kind of put Corey's tweet next to that, it does start to look like the pattern of we're looking for liquidity. Just saying.
But that's all shitcoiners. That's all shitcoiners do. They try and pull in funds and then play some games, smoke and mirrors, spend it on expensive nonsense. Yeah.
Don't you want your
complete neat nonsense?
That's a fun. They're running out of they're running out of pseudonyms for their
shitcoins.
Abbreviations rather for their shitcoins. Honestly, we're gonna run out of pseudonyms. But why not just normal staked ETH? And granted, you know, I don't shitcoin at all. TBL is a Bitcoin-only publication. You know, we're trying to make Bitcoin more professional by taking a traditional finance approach, analyzing macro, folding Bitcoin into it. That said, crypto is all shitcoins and affinity scams, and that's all it is. You know, it's not a good look. Can't recall where I was going with that point. The coffee's wearing off. But yeah, who the hell knows what's going to happen with Nexo? Just stay fucking far away from all these platforms, man.
Okay, so Joe's saying stay far away. Walton, I'm going to ask you, is Nexo next? Does it fall apart? Does it become like Celsius? Or somehow are they actually doing the right, the real thing and not reusing their customers' funds to trade against them and just losing their customer funds?
I mean, who knows? You guys already know the advice, right? Like, self-custody your Bitcoin. Stop fucking around. Fuck shit coins. Listen to Joe. Like, look, what Joe's saying is, like, if she hasn't got a nice ass, he doesn't care how big her boobs are. Like, it's about having a well-balanced portfolio, and that means that you need true diversification if that's what you're trying to achieve, unless you're a, you know, crazy Bitcoiner like me and you just go, fuck it, I'm having all Bitcoin. I don't care about, you know, bouncing this fiat number, whatever it is. But if you do want diversification, you need uncorrelated assets. Most people invest in, you know, index funds thinking that they're, you know, diversifying because they own, you know, a little bit of a few hundred stocks or something, when actually they're all heavily correlated. It's nonsense. Self-custody your Bitcoin. If you need some help, speak to Bitcoiners. There's lots of people that will help you. If you need one-on-one help, again, lots of people that do that sort of thing. Take responsibility, take sovereignty.
You're so passionate about what you're saying that you're blurry.
It's interesting. Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I don't know why it like blurred out. It's like it didn't zoom up. I don't understand. Anyways, that's what happens, right? Walton is so passionate. He's so Bitcoin only. He just, you know, some on Spaceballs, they went plaid. Well, in his case, he went blurry. All right, guys, we are approaching the end of the show. And before we close out, we just want to give a big shout out and huge thank you to Joe Consorti for joining us on the show. Joe, please tell the listeners, tell the viewers, where can they find you? How can they find you? All that good stuff.
Of course. Thanks a lot for having me. It was a really, really fun time. I hope to be back again. My Twitter handle is at Joe Consorti, spelled as it's going to be spelled in the title you can see there. And you can find me at the Bitcoin Layer. We're a premium markets research provider covering Bitcoin through a global macro lens. These yield products, they prey on the impressionable. And what do I mean by the impressionable? I mean people who are trying to seek a return without earning it. And the only way to actually have any hope of trading markets effectively is to understand markets effectively. And through our newsletter, through our YouTube channel, through my personal Twitter, and through Nick Bhatia's personal Twitter, author of Layered Money, him and I work together. We write this newsletter. We want to educate the masses, right? We do timely research and analysis on global macro, and we fold Bitcoin right into it, right? You know, we're not just solely on chain or solely rates or solely money markets. We do all of it, right? We want to give our readers a comprehensive understanding of the way that the monetary system works, because that's the only way that they can, you know, evolve and grow as human beings. So that's what we do. You can find me at thebitcoinlayer.com or at Joe Consorti on Twitter.
Absolutely awesome. We will add all of those details to the show notes. And guys, don't forget to check us out on our audio-only platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Anchor. If you want to stream us sats, check us out on fountain.fm. You can stream us sats through Breeze. And I just want to quote our awesome guest, Bitcoin companies are providing real value. And that's the truth. Walton, any last words?
Yeah, support those Bitcoin companies. Run your own node. Self-custody your Bitcoin. Fuck shit coins.
That's what I wanted, man. Fuck shit coins. All right, everyone. We will catch you all on the next episode.